Guess who's an Israelite? Guess. Oh, if you guessed Mark Zuckerberg, then you are correct. Yes, good morning, everyone. Mark Zuckerberg, the founder of Facebook. Now, I asked a question to lead off this show. Guess who is an Israelite? Now, my next question would be, guess what causes people to waste the most amount of time and be unproductive? If you guessed Facebook, then you're right again. I wonder if Facebook, the happy little icon with a small F and the pretty blue background, I wonder if Facebook is in any way instrumental or proposed by God to further dumb down this generation. I am Martin Zender, and you are here at the Revelation Series because you want to be, and you're hearing things that maybe you don't want to hear, and yet here it is. Here it is, and we face these things. If you're watching the laundry cam, I wanted a little bit of color today, probably because I'm wearing this awesome purple shirt. Let me tell you a little bit about Mark Zuckerberg. Now, I love it when people make money. I am happy for people who make money. This country would be wrecked if there weren't entrepreneurs and geniuses and inventive people like the Wright brothers, Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, Mark Zuckerberg. So I don't resent it. Nobody's ever gotten a job from a poor person. So God bless Mark Zuckerberg. However, I feel that, I believe that this marvel and miracle that we call the internet has been just as influential as television was in the 1950s to divert this generation from sober, sane, logical thoughts, a sober, sane, logical life, into a hyperactivity of hyper-connectivity that conspires to destroy and, let's say, shout down the natural curiosity that exists in everyone for God. Now, let me give you personal experience. When I am working on an article, and it's hard to write, very hard to write, it's hard to study about God, it's hard to focus, but it's even harder to focus when I know that a little Alt-Tab will take me to my email. Maybe I better check my email to see if someone wants to talk to me. Alt-Tab, it's just right there, it's right there. Oh, da-ding. I got a text. Oh, maybe somebody loves me. So I go to my text. It's so easy because we all love it. Who doesn't want to be loved? Who doesn't want to feel important to another person? And this is, I think, becoming addictive to many of us. We're addicted to being connected. And when we're not connected, we feel lost. How many people feel lost when they don't have their phone? I mean, even I am feeling this. It's like, where's my phone? I need to know if someone's contacting me. No, I don't. Why do I need to know that? Why does the world need to know it? It's a small world now, isn't it? It's a miracle. It's amazing that you can talk to people in another country, miles away, thousands of miles away. Instantly. You don't have to be patient nowadays. People used to write letters to people, and they would have to wait 2 weeks. You had to wait 2 weeks for your letter to arrive to your loved one. And you had to wait two more weeks to see if they responded to you, or if they agreed with whatever you told them in your letter, or if they still loved you, and so on and so forth. And this called for amazing patience. And people had patience back in the day. But now we are a generation of instant gratification. And so the slow things of God, the purposeful things of God, can be an extreme relief and comfort to people and should be. But sometimes it becomes something that we just can't tolerate because, we have to go. I mean, sorry, but I have to go. Sorry, but I have an appointment. I have to get my hair cut today. I have to be at the gym. I have to pick up the kids. I have to take my daughter to soccer practice. I have to have dinner on at 5 o'clock. Oh, I'm having the ladies from the card club over tonight. And so, man, sorry, I just can't do it. Oh, and I have to go on Facebook. Why? Because it's addictive. Because you're one alt tab away from seeing the most amazing pictures of the most wonderful people, all the people you know in your life. How many friends do you have? 1, 2, 3, 5,000, 10,000? You know how many friends Mark Zuckerberg has? It's actually here on his Wikipedia page. Mark Elliott Zuckerberg, born May 14th, 1984, age 32. And where's his Facebook friends? I saw it listed here. It was like, yes, 53 million friends or something like that. I guess I saw it on a different page. Oh, net worth. Net worth, $53.7 billion. That's as of August 2016. Spouse, Priscilla Chan. Children, Maxima. His child is named Maxima. Maxima Chan Zuckerberg. He has a sister named Randy. He has a website. It's facebook.com/Zuck. Mark Elliott Zuckerberg, born May 14th, 1984, is an American programmer, internet entrepreneur, executive, and philanthropist. He is the chairman, chief executive officer, and co-founder of social networking website Facebook. His net worth is estimated to be $53.7 billion as of August 2016, ranking him as the fifth richest person in the world. Let's cut to the chase here, shall we? Oh, since 2010, Time magazine has named Zuckerberg among the 100 wealthiest and most influential people in the world. We know that he's the fifth richest person in the world, but we're talking about influence here, and that is exactly what we're talking about in the unveiling of Jesus Christ. We're talking about the influence that Jews have on the earth via their owning and distributing entertainment media, whether it's internet, as in the case of Mr. Zuckerberg, Mark Elliott Zuckerberg, or in the case of, again, movies, television, music, video games. I'm going to go on here with Mr. Zuckerberg, but I'm going to continue quoting from A.E. Knox's book, because this is going to be so strange, because it's so contemporary, me telling you about Mark Zuckerberg. And then on the other hand, I'm reading a book that was written in the 1930s, which was as far removed as the internet and from Facebook as it was during the Battle of Hastings, or at the founding of America, or at the dawn of Adam. I mean, you might as well go back to the year 1206. If you're going to compare 1930s to the internet generation. So I realized after the show yesterday that the reason Mr. Knox cites a prohibition here is that in his day, they were prohibiting alcohol. And his thought was, well, we're supposedly becoming a more sober generation. The United States has, again, my page is ripped here, so it's difficult to read, actually incorporated the prohibition of intoxicating liquors in its constitution so that it seemed impossible to repeal it. Surely the world is getting sober, yet even the world allows that apart from the lawless use of intoxicating drinks, all society seems to be on a spree. Yeah, really? That was 1930. Oh, if Mr. Knox could see it now. He died in 1965. All the world seems to be on a spree? All society? Yeah. Yeah, I'll buy that. It is characterized by the swaggering braggadocio, and this guy had not even heard of the Kardashians or Jay-Z or any of the rappers. And he's talking in 1930 about swaggering braggadocio. Good Lord. Kanye West. Hadn't even heard of Kanye West. So if he woke up from his grave today and saw Kanye West, what would he say about swaggering braggadocio? Of the inebriated. Let me read that sentence again because it's so delightful to me. This society of 1930 is characterized by the swaggering braggadocio of the inebriated. It is pleasure mad in the very place where it is supposed to be sobered by constraint of law. So that was in the day. By the constraint of law in A.E. Knox's day, prohibition was in place. And yet, in spite of the lack of alcohol of that day, the world to Mr. Knox seemed inebriated in some strange sense. It seemed to be crazy, seemed to be going mad, seemed to be exhibiting all the traits of being intoxicated, swaggering braggadocio. I'm the greatest. I'm the best. Oh, what if he ever saw Muhammad Ali? Yeah. Float like a butterfly, sting like a bee, the great smell of Brute and the punch of Ali. Remember that Brute commercial? Apparently I do. How do I remember that? That was 40 years ago. About one in every 150 of Earth's populations is a Jew, yet there are not wanting those who have carefully considered the matter, who insist that this small minority has as much influence in mundane affairs as all of the rest put together. As most of the Jews have no personal influence on the world outside their own environment, this leaves a small group of the race with powers for good or evil unexampled in human history. This was written in 1930. Where you read, I'm going to read more of this. It's unbelievable. But listen to this. This leaves but a small group of the race with powers for good or evil unexampled in human history. And power today, and this is the key to recognizing the end times, power today is concentrated. Power today is centered in small groups of people that are not only influential, but rich. And the more rich they are, the more influential they are. And now we have another Jew, Zuckerberg, who has created a dynasty, a kingdom, a world where people can lose themselves. And it seems so innocent, just the place where people can stay connected. It's a global world now. That's a one world government is just a place where people can stay connected. That's another little euphemism for the one world government. And it could be used for good or evil. And we know that Albert Einstein was instrumental, and so was Oppenheimer, in the development of atomic power. And they did not design this to be used in times of war. It was just information. The information itself, the knowledge of fusion, the knowledge of splitting the atom, is that, just that. It's knowledge. It can be used for good or for evil. But when people get into power, it corrupts them. We can't grasp the thirst, the lust for power that some people have. And the lust for wealth, the lust for riches. We don't understand it because our kingdom's not of this world. But apparently now there are a lot of people who just want money and power. I know it's hard to believe. I can't understand it, but it's true. And I don't think it's coincidental that many of these people happen to be of the Israelite persuasion. And again, I will reiterate this over and over again, that I'm not saying this is a vast conspiracy. I acknowledge that the protocols of the elders of Zion, and I'm going to be quoting from that, I acknowledge it was a forgery. And yet it exists in humanity, this thought that somehow the Jews are taking over the world. Somehow. I say to you, it's because they're enterprising, it's because they're smart, because they have a knack for it, and they see a huge market of making money from the Gentile lust for pleasure. Not that the Jews also don't have a lust for pleasure, but their lust for money exceeds their lust for pleasure, and they can make money from people who want pleasure and who need pleasure and who just want to while away the day checking up on their friends. It's making us all detached. Detached from what is really important. You and I, we're hanging on. We're in it, but not of it. We dabble in it, of course. I do too, except Facebook. I hate Facebook. Facebook literally makes me perspire. I'll tell you more about that later. But for now, thank you for being bold enough to look into this with me. I'm not anti-Semitic, as I said, and I will continue to say I love Jewish people. But we're looking at trends here, we're looking at realities here, and we're looking at scripture here, and we're looking at a cup in the hands of a people who are intoxicating the entire world to prepare it for the coming of the Antichrist.